The Bob Murphy Show, Episode 3.
There's a tidal wave coming. What you gonna do?
Get ready for another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. It's your source for commentary and interviews conducted by a Christian and economist. Now here's your host, Bob Murphy.
Welcome everyone to another episode of The Bob Murphy Show. Now, if you've been following along since the launch, you know that I'm not afraid to do some long-form interviews. But also what we're going to do, because you know what? It's my podcast. I can do whatever I want. Is if there's some sort of topic that's hot in the news and I feel like chiming in, well, I've got my own podcast. So that's what I'm going to do. What we're going to talk about in this particular episode is the economics, or the faulty economics, I should say, behind the recent outrage over Amazon and Walmart and other big companies. They're ostensibly foisting their payroll onto the backs of the taxpayer because they're underpaying their employees so much that the employees have no choice but to turn to the government for food stamps and other forms of assistance. So the person who really crystallized this perspective was Tucker Carlson. I think the original piece that I'm going to play for you in a moment, well, it was published on Fox News on August 30th, 2018. So that's what I'm going to play for you. That's when it was published. I don't know if that means that was when it aired on TV or if there's a lag. But in any event, it was definitely late August. And then it really started making the rounds on Twitter and so forth. First week of September, as I recall it. So anyway, why don't we stop and I'll let Tucker Carlson speak for himself. We've got about a 45-second clip here. So just stretch and relax and listen. And by all means, I want you to go ahead and let him suck you in. Let him get that perspective across, because there is a certain common sense feel to it. And my point here is not to pick on Tucker Carlson or the other people who found this sort of argument persuasive, but I do want to walk through and show you why I'm going to actually argue the opposite, that actually, if anything, the existence of food stamps and other government programs for low-income households causes Jeff Bezos and other big employers to actually have to pay a higher wage than they otherwise would. All right. So again, I'm going to be trying to argue the exact opposite of what Tucker Carlson's saying. Without further ado, here's Tucker Carlson making his case.
Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, is worth about $150 billion. That's enough to make him the richest man in the world by far, and possibly the richest human being in all of human history. It's certainly enough to pay his employees well, but he doesn't. A huge number of Amazon workers are so poorly paid, they qualify for federal welfare benefits. According to data from the nonprofit group New Food Economy, nearly one in three Amazon employees in Arizona, for example, was on food stamps last year. Jeff Bezos isn't paying his workers enough to eat, so you made up the difference with your tax dollars. Next time you see Jeff Bezos, make certain that he says thank you.
Okay, and there you have it. Then he goes on to talk about Walmart, makes a similar case, quotes some statistics. And then he sort of gives a nod of the head to Bernie Sanders. Now, as I'm recording this, there's a big thing in the news. It just broke that Amazon is going to raise wages, and Bernie Sanders came out and applauded them. And Sanders had introduced his Stop Bezos Act, where Bezos was an acronym that spelled out something. But of course, he was targeting Jeff Bezos, among others. So let me just say, I'm not in this particular podcast going to get into all these other related issues. All right. Here, what I want to do is narrowly focus just on this claim that was obviously embedded there in the Tucker Carlson clip I just played for you. This claim that because, well, there's two different ways of looking at it. One way is you could say, hey, there's this federal food stamp program and other government benefits that are just out there. And then Bezos deliberately underpays his workers, knowing, aha, they'll have no choice but to go over and apply for benefits. And that's how I can get away with it. Or you might think of it in a less nefarious fashion and think that, you know, Bezos is just going out in the market and doing his thing. but because there's this the existence of this government food stamp program, it means in equilibrium, he can get away with paying less than people could live on because, you know, they don't just literally die because that the government's there as a backstop. All right. So either way, the claim is the existence of the federal food stamp program and other assistance programs for low-income households, that this allows big employers such as Amazon to pay their employees a lower wage rate than they otherwise would have to. Okay, so that's clearly rolled up into Tucker Carlson's complaints here, and that's why he's saying, if you see Jeff Bezos, have him say thank you, because in other words, you as a taxpayer having to pick up some of the bill because he's not paying his workers enough. All right, so that's what I'm going to say is wrong. Now, let me, before I dive in, again, this I'm focusing on this just because I think it's interesting that I saw so many people, especially on Twitter, who were passing around Tucker Carlson's video with approval. And to be fair, there were lots of other free market types who were aghast at it, partly, though, I think because of his, you know, bashing the rich kind of thing. And hey, I don't care what the reason is, if it's a voluntary market exchange, da, da, da. And other people, of course, are raising a lot of veiled objections like, hey, Amazon's not, this isn't a free market. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And that's certainly true. And if you're not aware of it, you know, one huge thing is that Amazon has a $600 million deal with the CIA for cloud computing projects and so forth. So I'll put a link to that if you're not aware of it. So let me, again, just be clear here. The point of my podcast is not to say, hey, a lot of people are upset at Amazon and you shouldn't be because this is just capitalism, baby. That's not what I'm saying. All right. This is just an opportunity for me to teach about economics because I think a lot of you may be missing some subtleties here. All right. So I don't care about Amazon. This isn't about Amazon. This is about the economics lying behind Tucker Carlson's recent clip. Okay. So I think just to have a specific example in mind, and I want to be able to use some numbers, it's just going to be convenient if we're imagining some particular household. And I'm going to link also in the show notes page. Again, this is The Bob Murphy Show, Episode 3. I'm going to link to an article that I did for the Independent Institute. So it ran at their blog called The Beacon, where I walked through some of this. So I'm going to pick the numbers to line up with what I did in that particular exposition as well. And these numbers are roughly plausible. Like, I didn't just pull these out of the air, that this roughly corresponds to a real situation. All right, so imagine there is a single working mother with two kids, and her take-home monthly wages are $1,700. So she might be able to get SNAP benefits. So SNAP is what we mean by food stamps. That's the new name for it. It's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP is an acronym. And so let's say she gets $300 a month in food stamps and SNAP benefits. So the way Tucker Carlson's thinking about that, in the way a lot of people, like I say, like even fans, you know, people who are my followers on Twitter and so on, when this story came out, is they're thinking, okay, well, yeah, because she's getting $300 a month in food stamps, she is able to, or she can afford to work for $300 less. And so why wouldn't Amazon just go ahead and reduce her paycheck? All right. And so then that's where they're coming from. Like, yeah, I mean, it's, you got to work to eat and, you know, to have your bare necessities. And so if some outside entity like the federal government sending you a check, well, then it seems plausible that, okay, so Amazon will gobble it up. So let me try a couple different ways to get you to see that there's something wrong with that way of thinking. Or actually, there's several things wrong with it, because I'm going to use independent methods to try to chip away at that. And I grant you, it does sound plausible, and it's actually fine insofar as it goes. Right. Like, in other words, that's not a false statement to say if you're getting $300 a month from the government, you could afford, other things equal, to get paid $300 less from your employer and you'd still be in the same position. So, yeah, that's a true statement. But then people think, oh, so naturally then that means your wage will drop by $300. And that's what I'm saying. No, that actually is a much more dubious step. So one way to try to just shake you and get you to reevaluate things, if that seemed really intuitive to you, that move in the argument, let me ask you this. Okay, so there's this lady and, you know, she's paying her landlord a certain amount, and now all of a sudden the government's giving her an extra $300 a month to pay, you know, to buy her groceries with. So why do we just automatically assume that that's going to get absorbed by the employer cutting her monthly wages by $300? Why don't you just assume that, oh, now that she has an extra $300 a month to play with, the landlord's going to jack up her rent by $300 a month, right? That seems as much, you know, hard knocks, and yeah, that's how the real world works, Murphy, not like your economics textbooks say where everything's free market, la, la, la. No, in the real world, poor people get screwed. And okay, I'm not saying they don't, but my point is, why do we automatically assume that when she's getting an extra $300 a month now from the government, the thing that gives in the equation is that now her wages go down $300? Why couldn't it be that somebody else, some other powerful person who has a lot of influence in her life, like her landlord, why wouldn't he just jack up her rent $300? Because, right? I mean, she can afford to pay $300 a month more in rent and still be just in the same position she was before. So it seems to be, in other words, I don't see any reason why it's more plausible to assume the employer gets the full benefit of that. Why wouldn't you assume that the landlord squeezes it out of her? For that matter, why wouldn't the local grocery store where she does her shopping, where she literally turns the food stamps in, if anybody is going to benefit as a third party from the fact that the government's giving food stamps to this woman, you would think, well, it wouldn't necessarily be her employer or the landlord. Like, surely the place where she goes and turns in the food stamps and then they send in the government and literally get cash for it, you would think they would be the prime beneficiaries, I mean, besides the woman herself. Right. So again, here I'm not making any definitive arguments one way or the other. I'm just trying to show you if it seemed to you like a no-brainer that, yeah, of course, the fact that she's now getting $300 from the government in food stamps means she can afford to get wages of $300 less. Therefore, that is what's going to happen. I'm just asking you, well, wait a minute. If she gets $300 a month more in food stamps, she could afford to pay more in rent, or she could afford to pay more in groceries. So how come we're not just assuming prices rise? And those latter two things. Now, besides being rhetorical here, well, do we have an economist? Or, oh, geez, that's me. I'm an economist. So why would I say, no, actually, you wouldn't expect that? And for whatever reason, and this is why, of course, I'm bringing those other considerations up, I think most people wouldn't have thought her landlord could do it. And they certainly wouldn't have expected the local grocery store. And I think it has to do with like issues of anonymity or something, you know, like, well, how would the landlord even know she has more money? Or how is the grocery store, you know? So clearly, what's the standard explanation from basic economics? If the landlord did all of a sudden try to jack up her rent by $300, well, I mean, it would be a hassle and she might pay it for a little bit, but ultimately she could just move, right? If before, whatever her rent was, if it was, I don't know, $700 a month, and then her landlord is now trying to charge her $1,000, well, she could just look around. I mean, there must be other comparable apartments that are $700, $750, $800 comparable to her original place. Because if there weren't, you know, in other words, if there were lots of other places that were identical, except they were all $1,000 or more, well, then why was she only paying $700 originally, right? So assuming that there was a market in apartments before, presumably she was in a place and she was paying the market rate. Even if there's rent control, by the way, still, well, if there's rent control, then the landlord couldn't jack up the price. But if there weren't rent control, the point is you could see why they wouldn't jack up the price, because if they try to do it, yeah, she might pay it for a little bit, but then eventually she'd move out. Likewise, with the grocery store, it can't be that she was paying a certain amount per month for groceries last month. Now, all of a sudden, the government's sending her checks for $300 or food stamps for $300 more, and she goes to the grocery store and all the prices have risen such that she's getting the same amount of apples and hamburger meat and milk and so forth that she got last month. And it's just costing her a total of $300 a month more. That's not what's going to happen. Clearly, she can, if she wanted to, she could get more groceries. Okay. Or what could happen is she would reduce the amount of cash she was using at the grocery store, because now she's armed with $300 a month in food stamps, and frees up that money for something else that the food stamps aren't eligible to purchase. She could do that too. All right. But clearly, I think most of us intuitively, even people who are really cynical, are going to say, yeah, the government just starts sending $300 a month in food stamps to this lady. It's not that when she goes to the grocery store, all of a sudden prices jump way up and she says, geez, I end up with the same amount of food as before. These food stamps have done nothing for me because price hikes completely absorbed them. That sounds crazy. So why is that? Well, because clearly when she walks into the grocery store, I mean, she's just one among many customers. If you know anything about the food business, the grocery business, they actually have very small margins, right? That how do they make their money? On volume. So it's not that they can just raise prices easily like that. If some grocery store did try to do that, well, she could just take her business elsewhere, right? So she's not going to be paying more for bananas because she started getting food stamps in the mail than she did the previous month. That's not going to happen. And again, if you say why, ultimately it's because of competition. Okay, so that seems pretty straightforward, I think. I hope that I haven't lost anybody. So now the one that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem as obvious when it comes to her relationship with her employer. If she originally, let's say, was getting $2,000 a month in wages and it wasn't getting food stamps, and now all of a sudden the government starts sending her food stamps for $300 a month, why would that all of a sudden make her employer just cut her wages by 300 and absorb that? I mean, they could try, and maybe she would stick around for a while, but presumably she would quit and go get a different job that was paying her more than 1700, because originally, if she was getting paid 2000, let's say, she must have been worth it. Her productivity must have justified getting paid $2,000 a month from the employer. That's why she had a job. And the fact that now all of a sudden the government on the side is giving her $300 a month, that shouldn't all of a sudden make her productivity change, at least not the payment per se. And so if the employer tried to cut her pay, you know, she could just go elsewhere. Just like if her parents felt bad for her, like they visited and said, geez, these kids really aren't getting enough to eat. And wow, this is tough. And then her parents just started sending her $300 a month. Would that all of a sudden make her employer cut her pay? I mean, that those two things don't seem to have anything to do with each other, right? So to the extent that you think there's competition and any sort of rationality in the labor market where people get paid roughly in accordance with their productivity, then you would say, okay, she was getting paid what she was getting paid because that was her productivity and that's what it justified. And if the government starts sending her checks, that doesn't change that. And again, if her employer tried to, so yeah, it's true. The employer tries to cut her wage, she might suck it up and deal with that for a while, but ultimately she's going to be looking for a job and get a job elsewhere. Just like if her landlord, you know, was looking at her mail coming in and then said, oh, I see she's getting $300 a month more, and then just announces, by the way, you know, your lease is month to month with me, and so next month I'm raising it $300. Yeah, she might go ahead and suck it up and pay that for a bit, but she's going to start looking for someplace else to live. All right, so you see that there, I think, the symmetry among those different possibilities. Let me also just say this is a different, completely separate argument. The people who are thinking there's millions of workers for Amazon and Walmart and other places who are being paid at the edge of starvation and it's only government checks that are keeping them from starving. And you're thinking, well, yeah, that's why if they eliminated the checks, well, then the companies would have no choice but to raise pay. But since those checks are forthcoming from the government, therefore they can, you know, these employers can all collectively keep the wages down. If that's the way you're thinking about the world, why is it that only a certain fraction of the population gets paid such low wages? How come everybody is not being paid, or at least every, you know, sailor or every person who earns wages, at least, how come every such worker isn't getting paid the bare minimum to survive? For that matter, and let me just go ahead and exaggerate it, why doesn't a major league pitcher get paid the minimum wage? Why don't brain surgeons get paid the minimum wage? Why don't corporate lawyers get paid the minimum wage? And the obvious answer is because of competition. They're worth a lot more to their employers. And so if one employer were underpaying them grossly, then there would be a huge opportunity for some other employer to offer them a higher wage. So that's why major league pitchers get paid boatloads of money and corporate lawyers get paid boatloads of money and so forth. Other people, brain surgeons and so on. Some hospital was paying a world-renowned brain surgeon $10,000 a year. Some other hospital or some other, you know, clinic would say, whoa, we'll pay much more than that. So those are exaggerated examples, of course, but just, you know, think through the logic. Why is that true? Why are we all getting paid the minimum wage? Okay. And then that follows with even low skill labor. It's the same principle. So the numbers aren't as big, but it's the same principle. So it's, I think it's odd. And here now, this is more probably like the left-wing progressives who endorse Bernie Sanders, not so much necessarily the right-wing conservatives who are fans of Tucker Carlson half the time, you know, depending on what his topic is that night. But still, it's worth pointing out that it can't really be that millions of workers are all being grossly underpaid. which seems to be the worldview of people who think, oh yeah, these workers are worth a certain amount, and you know that they're generating enough for their employer that they could afford, the employer could afford to pay them a quote living wage. But since the government is there as a backstop, the employers say, ah, no, I'm not going to do it because I don't need to. And I'm saying, if that's your worldview, then something's odd there. You think there's this systematic failure of competition. And this has nothing to do with like being nice or generous or a nice employer who just went and watched A Christmas Carol or something and they feel good about, or they feel bad about underpaying people. It has nothing to do with altruism. This is just straight business proposition. If Amazon really were grossly underpaying millions of employees, well, then how come some other big company doesn't come and offer them a little bit more? I'm not saying they have to offer them the whole amount more, but you know, to listen to Tucker Carlson, he didn't really actually say this one way. He just said, oh, Jeff Bezos is rich enough, he could afford to do it. But you don't get the sense from him that he's asking Bezos, hey, out of the goodness of your heart, can you just make a charitable donation to these workers who really aren't productive? I know you're paying them right now what they're worth, but can't you just make a gift to them? Kind of like I might ask you to give a donation to buy malaria nets in Africa, even though that's not going to have a return of investment for you. I don't get the sense that's what Tucker Carlson was saying. And certainly the people passing around his video, I don't get the sense of what they're saying. I think they were saying these workers are generating plenty of money for you, Bezos, and you're not paying them what they're worth. You're sitting back because the government's allowing you to. And so, again, my point is simply, if that's true, then why don't the critics start their own company at the very least? And you don't even have to say that. There's plenty of big companies. It's not that there's very particular skills that you need to be able to work, you know, as a stock boy in Walmart, and those skills don't transfer anywhere else in the country. I mean, that's not really what's going on here. So again, if these major employers are systematically underpaying their workers, then even among each other, these major employers, why aren't they outbidding each other? And I guess you could come up with stories about, well, they have a secret agreement, da da da. But again, there's open competition, open entry into these various fields. Okay, so that's, again, the sort of standard analysis here. I'm just walking you through trying to get you to see if you bought my argument that, yeah, just because someone's getting food stamps, or again, there's nothing magical about it coming from the government. What if somebody's rich uncle looks at your condition and is like, geez, your guy's really struggling there. My nephew's struggling. I'm going to maybe send him some more money each month just until he gets on his feet. Would you just say, yeah, thanks, Uncle Jack, but that really doesn't do anything, because once you know how you're direct depositing $200 into my account each month? Yeah, well, my employer just cut my wages $200. No, those things have nothing to do with each other. Let's try this. Let's exaggerate it just to make sure you guys get my point. Somebody who's working for Amazon right now and probably saw Tucker Carlson, yeah, Jeff Bezos, oh, geez, what a jerk. He's walking down the street and he finds $1,000 just lying there. Somebody dropped it, $1,000 cash. He picks it up and pockets it. Does that mean next month he's going to get paid $1,000 less because now he can afford to? No. All right. And so if you get it in the one-off case, well, okay, suppose every month he's just really lucky. He keeps finding money just lying all over the place. Does that mean he's going to get paid less than the guy working right next to him in the fulfillment center, even though their skills are identical, but the guy next to him doesn't keep seeing this money lying around? No, of course, they're going to get paid the same. From Jeff Bezos' perspective, they're both generating the same amount and they're interchangeable, so they're going to get paid the same. All right, why don't we pause here for a moment for a word from our sponsor. Who's our sponsor? It's me, Bob Murphy. Folks, if you like the economic analysis you're hearing in this episode, I highly recommend that you get my book, Contra Krugman, Smashing the Errors of America's Most Famous Keynesian. So it's a 600-page book. This is not a little slim read that you're going to just knock out in the bathtub. I mean, if you did, you're going to have prune hands by the time you get out. That's all I'm saying. 600 pages, what it is, it's a collection of essays that I've written over the years critiquing Paul Krugman. Now, let me be clear. If you listen to the podcast I do with Tom Woods, you might think, I don't need to see a book. I listen to you guys. And then this is different. And I would say, if you like the podcast I do with Tom, then you're going to love this book. Also, if you get the audiobook version, it's narrated by Tom. It is, I believe, something like 16 hours. Can you imagine that? 16 hours, just Tom reading my stuff. I mean, it'd be good enough if he was reading his own stuff, but he's reading my stuff. I really don't see how you can go wrong with that. So where do you go for all this pleasure, enjoyment, education? ContraKrugmanBook.com. Okay, folks, now we're back. So in the first segment of this episode, I tried using various angles to warm you up to the idea that it can't be that any particular worker, just because now all of a sudden is getting subsidized by some outside entity, could be the federal government, could be Uncle Jack, could be your parents, could be that you're just wandering around the neighborhood and just keep finding money. It can't be that that by itself corresponds to or triggers a cut in the pay you get from your employer. And again, why? Not because your employer is a fair guy or something, but just because of competition, right? And again, one of the arguments I used was to say, yeah, you think, oh, well, he can afford to. No, the worker can afford to work for less. Well, yeah, that's a true statement. But by the same token, the worker who's now getting that outside subsidy can afford to pay more to the landlord, or can afford to pay more in groceries, can afford to pay more to the local movie theater. And so why don't we just assume that that, you know, paycheck disappears that way because these other places raise their prices? And yet we don't seem to think that. And I think the reason is that for whatever reason, it seems more plausible to think that competition really protects that individual in his or her role as a consumer, and that any particular seller of goods or services can't just jack up the price. Whereas we, for whatever reason, don't translate that protection to the employer-employee relationship. And I grant you, it may be part of the reason is because, you know, with your employer, that's really a long-term thing, and man, it's a hassle to switch jobs. So it could be that, but still, there is that ultimate exit option. Now, let me throw you a curveball. You may have thought by me saying all this that I was claiming the existence of the food stamp program couldn't possibly alter wage rates in general. And actually, no, that's not what I'm saying. You might say, what the heck, Murphy, are you contradicting yourself already? We're only in podcast 3. No. So what I was doing in the beginning of this episode is I was trying to show you one particular worker, let's assume before wasn't getting food stamps, now is getting food stamps, that by itself should not affect in the long run, if you know, give the worker time to renegotiate or, you know, go seek employment or an apartment unit or food sales elsewhere, in the long run, that is not going to affect that one worker's rent or take-home wage or how much that worker pays for bananas. Again, what we're saying is everybody else is getting something before, you know, this same situation. Now this one worker all of a sudden, like, let's say, applies for food stamps. Okay. Or starts finding money, or the Uncle Jack starts giving the person money. Okay. That, though, does not follow from that observation that if the government starts sending food stamps to millions of Americans, that won't alter the new equilibrium wage rates and possible prices. So, for example, it is conceivable to me that the price of certain food items at grocery stores goes up if now the government is spending billions of dollars a year on the food stamp program and only certain food items are eligible, right? So it wouldn't, I don't know this, I didn't do any research, but it wouldn't surprise me if major grocery chains behind the scenes do lobby for food stamp programs. Certainly I know food vendors lobby for school lunch programs. Now there, I think it's less, or let me put it this way, there's more corruption and more rent seeking in the public choice sense of that term in food vendors getting government schools, what were called public schools, to have school lunch programs, I think, because they get the contract, right? Whereas if the government's just sending food stamps to individuals and they're buying groceries at the checkout, I think there's less of a chance to be able to market up and to earn a higher profit than normal. But still, I am not claiming that the grocery stores in general aren't able to raise prices in response to the fact that now millions of Americans are getting food stamps. Another example, the fact that the federal government subsidizes higher education, I think makes tuition prices higher than they otherwise would be. Okay, so maybe that's the way for you to think about what I'm saying. I'm saying one particular student, you know, the Stafford loan programs and all that stuff is what it is. And then now one student's thinking about going somewhere, and if he just applies and gets, you know, money on the side, it's not so much that he's, you know, that prices are going to change for that one thing. Prices are what they are. But if the government's sending checks to millions of people, then maybe in the new equilibrium, yes, prices are different. Okay, so you might say, okay, Murphy, so what are you saying? Are you saying actually Tucker Carlson's right that with millions of people getting food stamps in the new equilibrium, they're all getting lower paychecks from Amazon? Well, that was Tucker Carlson's point, you idiot. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's the opposite. Okay, so in the new equilibrium, the fact that the federal government is sending checks to people saying, if you don't make above a certain amount, we will send you food stamps and, you know, we give you other kinds of benefits as well. I am saying that means now because of that program, Jeff Bezos has to pay a higher wage to get people to go to his Amazon fulfillment centers. Why? Because now all those millions of workers have more options. They're in a stronger bargaining position. It's easier for them to not work for Jeff Bezos, to walk away, because they have a bit of a cushion. Whereas if they didn't get that money from the government, then they would be in a worse bargaining position and they would have to work at Amazon, or they would be more likely to work at Amazon. If you know economic, you know, standard stuff, all I'm saying is the existence of the food stamp program makes the supply curve for labor at Amazon fulfillment centers shift to the left. It makes workers less willing for a given wage rate to sell labor hours to Jeff Bezos. That's what I'm saying. And so if the supply curve shifts left and the demand hasn't changed, there's no reason to think that just workers getting sent checks per se is going to change Jeff Bezos' demand for workers, or at least it's not obvious how it would do it. It's certainly not a first order effect. Then you would think the wage rate would go up. One way of putting that, to try to get you to see it in case, you know, I'm hoping you at least understand what I'm saying and maybe you're just not convinced. Let me push it. Let me exaggerate. A lot of times with economics, just to get a principle across, you grossly exaggerate it so that everybody can agree, okay, yeah, and that outcome or that scenario, duh. And then you just quibble about the details later. Like, are there other things that offset us? Like with the minimum wage, if you're talking to someone who, you know, has never heard an objection to it before, or doesn't think there's, you say, okay, well, if you want a $15 an hour minimum wage and you think that's good, because, you know, that'll just motivate workers and, hey, workers will have more money in their pocket and they'll go spend it and they'll, you know, that'll boost revenue and so businesses won't lose money. Why not have a $100 an hour minimum wage? And then hopefully at that level, people can see, well, yeah, that wouldn't work. So that, by the way, that doesn't disprove the case for a $15 an hour minimum wage, but it does just show you, okay, so that principle is in play here. Now, if you're defending the $15 an hour minimum wage, you have to tell me why the thing that would ruin $100 minimum wage is weak enough that whatever the benefits are offset it at $15 an hour. Cause clearly the principle is still the same. So, it, you know, it might be fine. You know, I could say, yeah, it's okay to have a beer once in a while. And then somebody could say, oh, so it's okay to have 1,000 beers. And then, you know, that doesn't blow up the case for having beer. Okay. But there again, you know, you could sit there and say, well, yeah, because here's what's wrong with 1,000 beers, and actually notice that with one beer, you don't crowd it. Okay. So likewise now with this particular example, the situation with Amazon, what if we had a universal basic income, right? What if the government just said to everybody, you don't have to do anything. You can have a subsistence level, or even depending on how generous the person is who's making up these fanciful figures, you know, you can actually have a decent life doing nothing, you know, without having to work officially. Well, the government will give you a check every month such that you can meet all your basic needs. You're not going to be living like a king, but, you know, it'll be respectable. Suppose we had that. Now, does that mean in that kind of a world, would Tucker Carlson predict, or those of you who still think Tucker Carlson's initial clip there was compelling, if the government were sending everybody enough that they literally didn't have to work at all and they could have a decent standard of living, would you predict all those people would be going day after day back to Amazon's fulfillment centers and working for nothing? Because that's where your logic is pushing you. If you're saying the household who gets $300 a month is able or can afford to take a $300 cut in pay, and therefore Amazon will go ahead and implement that and absorb it, then okay, what if you're getting paid enough that you literally don't need to get, you know, you don't need to work to live and survive? Does that mean Amazon then could get away with paying all these workers zero? Even though there's lots of anecdotal reports that these conditions in these fulfillment centers is pretty bad. Like this stuff, like you don't even get a bathroom break and stuff like that. So why would they do that? They would just quit, right? They would say, what, are you kidding me? You're going to offer me nothing to work in this miserable place, putting together, you know, diapers and books and so on for people who are too lazy to go down to the store and get it themselves? Forget that. Okay, so if you see the logic there, I mean, and the reason I'm bringing this up is part of the motivation. The proponents of a UBI, universal basic income, part of where they're coming from is they're going to say, this will get rid of all these crappy jobs in America. No more people having to work at McDonald's and just being these dead-end, awful, miserable jobs, or at least places like McDonald's will have to really revamp their infrastructure, make it so that it's not a miserable job, right? Because they're saying nobody anymore would have to work at a really miserable job just to eat. Now the only way you're going to get an employer to entice someone to come in and work at all is if it's fulfilling and blah, blah, blah. Okay. And that's, so my objection to UBI is that I don't think the numbers work, and also the, you know, the ethics of you got to tax people to pay for it. But that part of the argument I think is correct. Yeah, the more generous the UBI benefits, if it were sustainable, if it were feasible, the fewer people you would predict to be working in miserable jobs, especially for low pay. Why would they? That'd be stupid. Okay, so if you get that, then I'm saying the fact that the government goes from sending $0 a month to all of a sudden sending, let's say, $300 a month to somebody should make that person less willing to go work in a miserable job for a given wage rate. And especially, you know, for any individual case, situations are complex. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But if you're talking about millions of people who are now getting these checks from the government, and Amazon's trying to employ millions of people in the new equilibrium, they're going to actually have to pay more per hour because now those workers collectively have stronger bargaining power. Okay, so I think I've hit that enough. Let me now, the last point I'll tackle, and this one's real subtle. This one threw me for a bit as well. So, by the way, another reason that I picked this and I wanted to devote a whole episode to it is because I was walking around for a few days mulling this over. So one thing that, you know, I knew that there was something wrong with the original logic or something incomplete with just saying, yeah, just because the worker now has more money from the government, they can, quote, afford to work for less. That doesn't prove, therefore, that is going to be the outcome. And so the thing that made it click for me was like, oh, yeah, right. Why don't we assume the landlord just jacks up the rent by that much? And then it was clear to me that, okay, you know, that's the way to intuitively get across the fact that just because the worker can, quote, afford to take a pay cut, why would you assume that's what's going to happen? But then the other thing that was tripping me up is the fact that SNAP, you know, food stamps and these other programs under consideration here in this analysis, they're actually means tested. All right. And so actually that's a little bit different from UBI. UBI just says you get this check no matter what. Whereas SNAP, it phases out as you get paid more. Now, incidentally, it's not a dollar for dollar phase out. So it's not that you have an implicit 100% tax, right? So if your income is such that you qualify for SNAP benefits and then you get $100 a month pay raise, it's not that your SNAP benefits drop off by $100 so that you literally don't care one way or the other. It does drop off, but it's not dollar for dollar. And it's actually convoluted and it depends on the levels, but So it is. It does drop off, and a lot of economists point out that that's not a good system because they call it a poverty trap, right? So if you're a low income person getting all these government benefits, especially now with Obamacare, this is something that Casey Mulligan, I'll put that in the show notes page. Incidentally, one of the problems with Obamacare is that by having the subsidies based on income, it exacerbated this problem that I'm talking about, where low income households face an implicitly very high tax rate. Like depending on the numbers, theoretically, they might face a tax rate of something like 70 to 80%. Meaning if they go earn an extra $100 a month, when all is, their take home pay and then the fact that their benefits through various government programs also diminishes, that extra $100 a month that they're getting from their employer might only mean their disposable income, all things considered, goes up whatever, $20 or $30 a month. And so you can see how on the margin, you know, it's not worth it as much for them to go out and get that $100 pay raise, or it's, you know, they don't have as much of an incentive. Okay, so that is true. And so for people who were going along with Tucker Carlson when he was claiming that, hey, these programs allow these workers to end up earning less money than they otherwise would, especially when the programs are means tested, where you only get SNAP and these other benefits if you don't make much money, and you might even as a recipient rationally keep your income below a certain threshold so you don't forfeit your benefits, then it does sound right, doesn't it? Like, yeah, geez, you know, if the government in a sense is paying you not to make too much, that's what we would expect to see, right? Just like we as free market economists say, hey, unemployment benefits, you know, when the government gives you a check if you don't have a job, extends people's spells of unemployment. And that, you know, that's theoretically makes perfect sense, and it's demonstrable, it's empirically well supported. During the Great Recession, for example, when they finally stopped extending the unemployment benefits, all of a sudden a bunch of people started finding jobs. Like, you can see that in the data. So you might think, wait a minute, Murphy, you're paying people if they keep their income below a certain threshold. So doesn't that line up with what Tucker Carlson's saying? Isn't it true that Amazon and these other big employers who hire low-skilled workers, don't they pay less because now the government is effectively paying these workers to not make too much? That kind of all fits, doesn't it? And it certainly lines up with other free market arguments and criticisms of the welfare state and poverty traps and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, or make up your mind, Murphy. You know, some sort of metaphor here to be the critic's criticism of me. And I was, again, this a couple of days, it took me to, because the logic that I've been walking you guys through up till now, it seemed unassailable to me. And yet this other objection is like, yeah, in other contexts, I do talk like that. So what's going on? And I figured out what it is. So the reconciliation of those different perspectives is the following. When we're talking about Jeff Bezos underpaying his workers, we're not talking about the total number of dollars that he pays. And we're also not talking about how much does a particular worker get total. What we're talking about is the wage rate. How much does he pay per hour? And so the way I would reconcile all those things, that number one, yes, it is true, I'm saying Jeff Bezos, to get a given amount of labor hours out of a pool of workers, the existence of the food stamp program, I still claim, makes him have to pay more per hour. However, it is also true that if the government announces to the world, hey, we will send you money every month to buy food, but only if you keep your monthly total income below a certain threshold, or we'll phase the benefit out the more you make, then yes, it's also true that we would expect people to make less total money per month than they otherwise would have in the absence of that program. But those two things are compatible, and I think they're both correct. So what ends up happening is, yes, a lot of workers might restrict their hours. You know, in other words, somebody might be working 18 hours a week and they have the option of working 25 or 30, but they don't because, oh, then I might lose my food stamps, or, you know, I'll miss out on the Affordable Care Act, the subsidies I'm getting on the exchanges. And so, yeah, I'm just going to keep my hours at 18. Somebody could think that. And yet still, Jeff Bezos, per hour of labor that he hires for his fulfillment centers, is paying more than he would be in the absence of the food stamp program. Okay. So that's the way I'm reconciling those two things. And I, again, it's not just that I'm fumbling around trying to reconcile them. I think that they're both correct, and I'm just realizing those don't contradict each other. So again, just to summarize, I think Jeff Bezos is paying more per hour to get people to be willing to show up to these fulfillment centers where the working conditions seem to be miserable, at least according to a lot of the anecdotes I've read. And by the way, and that's the thing too, the way Amazon came out and defended itself, and of course, you know, this is a nice fancy press release and they doctor it up and everything and window dressing, but they were citing statistics saying about how, oh no, we pay, well, you know, decent benefits and wages and stuff, you know, compared to the industry, da, 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 da. And that's compatible with the people saying this is horrible working conditions. I mean, just think about it. If Amazon paid less than other major employers and the working conditions were terrible, then why are people working there? Okay. So there's that element as well. So I think the what makes sense is to say that yes, people do get paid more per hour working for Amazon because the government is subsidizing them. Because again, that gives you a greater bargaining position. You know, you can walk out more easily, the fact that you're getting this money on the side. And it's still true that paying people food stamps and other things based on their income, where it phases out the more you make, that induces them to work fewer hours than they otherwise would. All right. So I think those are both true propositions. And so notice that ultimately we've come up with the fact that I don't think Jeff Bezos owes you a thank you, at least not for, I mean, he might owe it to you in the sense because you're a taxpayer and then they've got some sweetheart deal with the CIA, but he doesn't owe you a thank you because, oh, since you pay food stamp or you pay taxes that fund food stamp and other government programs, that means Amazon, to get the amount of work done that it needs to have done in the fulfillment centers, ends up paying less. I don't think that's correct. So again, it might be that they hire three people who each work 13 hours a week rather than just hiring one person who works 39 hours. But what I'm saying is the wage rate that Amazon has to pay to those three workers for their 13 hours per hour is higher than it otherwise would be. So for, again, for a given amount of work measured in labor hours, Amazon is paying a higher total wage bill than they would if the benefits were, or if the food stamp program didn't exist. Last thing I'll say, and I'll wrap this thing up, is an important part of my argument was that Amazon is not a pleasant place to work, at least not in these fulfillment centers, which is what the whole discussion's about. Right? We're not talking about upper level management or something. So you could imagine jobs that were very pleasant. So for example, people can be interns, right? So people work for $0 an hour because it's good for their career. They learn a lot of skills, what have you, or just, you know, cool. You know, some kid might want to go be an intern at NASA or something just to go see the space shuttle, or they don't even have space shuttles anymore, do they? You get my point. So there, how could someone afford to do that? Well, yeah, because maybe their parents pay for them, or they're living on student loans or whatever. Maybe they saved up before and now they're going to go do the internship. So there, yes, that logic does work, that you could say, oh, the reason this college kid can afford to take an internship over the summer and go work at this place is because his parents are subsidizing him. And if his parents weren't there backstopping him, he would have to go out and get a real job and pay for himself. All right. So there is that element. And likewise, you know, with UBI, if that were the standard and everyone was just getting the checks from the government that they could, a lot of people would still choose to work, but they would, you know, do things like they would work maybe like at a bookstore, or maybe they would work at a coffee shop that was, you know, a cool hipster coffee shop where they'd see their friends if they were young and, you know, just, oh yeah, I'll do that. Make some extra spending money for the, you know, for the weekend. They're not going to go work at a fulfillment center where they have to pee their pants or, you know, wear adult diapers or something because the guy running the shop floor is a tyrant. You're not going to go do that, but you might go do something else. So again, where you learn skills, or it's just a fun, pleasant place and you see people and get a little extra spending money. Okay. So it is possible that the supply curve for those types of jobs could shift to the right in the presence of subsidization, whether from your parents or your own saving or what have you. All right. So there's lots of possibilities here. And so I'm just pointing out the fact that, crucial to my argument when I was saying that the existence of the food stamp program, I believe empirically, would make workers less likely to sell labor hours to Amazon for a particular wage rate. I'm saying part of what was making me say that was the fact that the reason you're going to work at a fulfillment center is for the paycheck. You're not doing it because it's a fun environment, or because you get to see your friends there, or because it's going to, you know, look good on your resume or something. I'm speaking with broad brushes here. I mean, maybe I'm going to get some feedback and people say, what are you talking about, Murphy? I did this one summer and then I got this job. Okay. So I'm just talking about the anecdotal reports we're getting from people who are bashing Amazon, the horror stories. That's what I'm talking about. All right. Again, so in contrast, you could imagine different types of occupations where, if you were independently getting money that you could live on, you might work in those things. Right. There'd probably be a lot more podcasting going on, for example. A lot more people would throw their effort into websites. There'd be a lot more people trying to become actors and musicians and so forth if there were UBI, okay? So, because again, those fields, it's not that they're literally just hobbies. You could make money doing them, but it's the kind of thing where, yeah, you might slave away and then sell one or two paintings at the next art exhibit and you make $200 or something. But you can afford to do that if you're getting the UBI. Whereas if you didn't get that UBI, you'd have to go work someplace else where you were miserable in order to eat, okay? So that's the full rounded picture. But again, conclusion is, using theory and some common sense observations about how the world works and the preferences workers have, I believe that the existence of food stamps and other programs like that reduces the supply of labor that's being offered to Amazon and other places that are not particularly pleasant work environments. And that means in the new equilibrium, Jeff Bezos has to pay more per hour for those types of workers. And so on that narrow point, I'm going to say Tucker Carlson was out of line. He was wrong, and he should not have gotten so angry and indignant about Amazon in that respect. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'll see you next time.
You've just experienced another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. For more information and to subscribe to this podcast, visit bobmurphyshow.com.